This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is the chairman of the House Budget Committee, Representative Jody Arrington, and we'll talk with him in just a moment. First off, at a Senate Natural Resources Committee hearing recently, there was an opening statement on the Forest Service's FY25 budget request. From West Virginia, Chairman Joe Manchin explains.
May would normally be just the start of the fire season. We've already had record-breaking wildfires, as it's becoming all too common. In February, while it was still snowing, over 1 million acres in Texas burned, killing two people and destroying 130 homes. All signs point to a very active fire year in the U.S., and I know my colleagues from western states are on pins and needles watching the next ignition that could devastate their communities.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Jody Arrington. He's the chairman of the House Budget Committee and also represents the 19th Congressional District of Texas.
Guns up.
Great to see you.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Well, it is a really busy time in D.C., and it's almost a feast or famine. You might have a week or so where things are kind of quiet, but this is not one of those at all.
No, we're full steam ahead coming out of the funding bills that we passed, which were delayed from last year from the change in the speaker. That really set us back, made us have to kick the can down the road, unfortunately, on the farm bill. We started a new funding cycle. And we are way ahead of the curve now. We actually got our Republican budget submitted before the president even submitted his. That hasn't happened in over 20 years, but you got a West Texan at the helm of the budget committee, so things are different. Hopefully they'll play out differently in the final analysis, and we'll continue to reduce our spending, make investments in our national priorities, and included in that is our food supply resilience and our food security as a country, which means got to get that farm bill done. And not just get it done, we got to make the fixes that are necessary to ensure economic stability and a real reliable safety net for our producers.
You know, part of what Congress has to deal with is something known as the CBO. That's, I guess, provides maybe not a roadmap for you, but at least is supposed to provide the roads, show you where the roads are, if you will. How important is CBO scoring as we move forward with this farm bill?
It's critically important. The Congressional Budget Office is a nonpartisan organization that reports to the Budget Committee, or I should say budget committees in both chambers, the House and Senate. The House is in Republican control. The Senate is in Democrat control. So there are often differences of opinion from the different chairs and from the different parties. But with respect to the farm bill, we are implementing or proposing some reforms that will create savings. And those savings can be plowed into, for example, the safety net, both weather risk and market risk, the PLC and ARC, to lift the reference prices, strengthen the safety net so our producers can survive the challenges they face, like the drought and trade wars and just the inflationary firestorm that has made the turning a profit almost impossible with the cost of fertilizer, fuel, seed, etc. So that's why it's important. How those things are scored is going to have an impact on how much savings and monies can be plowed in or invested in strengthening the safety net, which in my opinion is the most important thing we can do in this farm bill, especially again with this inflationary environment. The safety net today from the last five-year farm bill is just almost irrelevant, almost entirely irrelevant. So because it doesn't matter even if you're getting average or good or even excellent prices, if your input costs are 100, 200, 300%. So that has to be addressed or we're going to lose producers, and it's going to be extremely disruptive to the supply chain.
I'll see if I can turn some of the words that you've used and put them together in a sentence a little differently, addressing the debt. And you talk about inflation creating an additional problem for our debt as we work on budgets and trying to address the fiscal situation for the U.S. in 5, 10, 15 years. How do we do that?
I worry, Tony, that the biggest threat to our country's future is a fiscal or debt-related crisis that would undermine the funding of farm bills, putting a military on the battlefield that can deal with the evolving threats. It would jeopardize our security. It would threaten America's leadership in the world. I mean, China's breathing down our necks. I don't think the big risks are existential. I don't think we're going to have a kinetic war, if you will. Now, you've got to be prepared to. And that's becoming more difficult because of our amassing debt and the interest that we pay on the debt. Tony, we're going to pay upwards of $850 billion just to service the debt. That's the interest payment on the $34-plus trillion debt. That's more than we spend on all of national defense. And that is going to more than double over the next 10 years. The gap in funding our government, that gap between what we bring in revenue and what we spend to pay for the government, is almost $2 trillion. That will double over 10 years. We are in this explosive debt and interest death spiral, and we've got to intervene. And these are difficult decisions that we have to make as a country and as leaders. And I'm finding it that political courage is few and far between up here. You don't want to wait until you have a crisis. If that happens and our creditors lose confidence that we'll pay them back, that is a Greece-like sovereign debt crisis. And by the way, ag-related funding mechanisms and programs, including the safety net, will be some of the first things to go. And that's why I think everybody, including the folks in rural America, should be very concerned about the highest level of indebtedness in the history of our country, higher than when we were fighting Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany in a world war, and we're in relative peace and prosperity.
I recall a meeting that you were at. Actually, you were receiving an award, and there was another elected official at that, and he got up and said, "I'm not going to say much because I'm a politician, but I want you to hear from a guy who's serving you because he loves the policy." And so the question here, and I guess the last one here, is there any optimism on the horizon, in the radar, that we can move past politics and address policy issues minus politics? Can that be done?
It's difficult. This is an intense environment. I think the country is divided culturally, not just, you know, here in Washington. And people understand that we are entering a very historic inflection point. That's why we all say on both sides of the aisle, this election is the most important of our lifetime. There are two very different visions for the future of our country. Look at the president's 10-year budget. He says, if you show me your budget, I'll show you your priorities and your values. His budget, among other things that he prioritizes policy-wise, is the highest level of spending, taxing, and borrowing in the history of the United States. We cannot sustain that. Our economy has been hurt. Our families and working Americans have been set back to the tune of $17,000 a year in terms of real wage loss. Our economy is teetering on recession and maybe stagflation, which is even a greater conundrum. we have to make some serious course corrections. We've talked about the farm bill. We've talked about debt. There are other threats, certainly investing in our defense. Food security, by the way, is part of that. I've always said that and have to make that argument to my colleagues. But we where you can, you got to reach across the aisle. Where you can, you should find consensus because it's more sustainable for the country and it's better long term. But it's difficult in these days because there is a stark difference in direction. And I think because of that, emotions are running really high. But we passed a debt commission that brings both parties together to deal with not only the debt, but the insolvency of Social Security and Medicare, because that's ultimately how it's going to be solved. And I think GT is working very hard to get a bipartisan farm bill because he understands in the final analysis, that's what we have to do. And both sides aren't going to get everything they want, but that's governing. And that's how this country's run for almost 250 years. So we keep pushing through in that manner, recognizing that there really are some stark contrasts and differences in where we want to take this country, and that's just the reality.
So good to see you.
You too.
Thanks for your time, especially in a busy week like this. We wish you the best.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to have a slice of home here in Washington with me.
It's the Honorable Jody Arrington, represents the 19th Congressional District of Texas, is also chairman of the House Budget Committee. From Capitol Hill, I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Alma Adams is from the 12th District of North Carolina.
As many here have established at the last meeting of this committee, then a bill that makes aggressive cuts to SNAP and doesn't even try to stop the bleeding of the crisis facing small farmers puts this country at risk. Mr. Chairman, furthermore, climate change poses life and death threats to our food supply and to all invisible workers who make our agriculture industry possible. This bill eliminates the flow of IRA's conservative dollars to climate smart practices that benefit producers and the planet. And what universe does deepening climate calamity make our country safer? What future are we building for our children? The supposedly bipartisan wins that exist in this bill are funded by unacceptable partisan cuts. Cuts that are cruel, cuts that are ignorant of the problems facing our families and farmers back home. And so I'd like to enter into the record a letter from the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Food Policy Council in opposition to this bill and the SNAP cuts at the center of it. I'm opposing this bill until we read something that's worth its name.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Are you planning on fence or brushwork on your ranch this summer? West Texas Attachments has the skid steer attachments you need to make the job easier. Clear the way with their rock and brush grapple and drive posts quickly and accurately with the Montana Post Driver. They also have a tree and post puller that will handle trees up to 3 inches in diameter. West Texas Attachments also offers low-cost delivery to your area. Call Brad at 806-548-7167 or visit westtexasattachments.com to get the skid steer attachments to make your job easier.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Jody Arrington, Chairman of the Budget Committee.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
No matter where in the country that major crops are grown and are being planted,
producers are making pretty remarkable progress in spite of ongoing active weather.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says producers this past week have been taking full advantage of gaps in storminess to get some planting done.
And that is especially true this week across the northern Corn Belt, where we saw pretty impressive progress on some of the planting numbers.
For example,
we saw a planting progress of 25% or more, in other words, a quarter of the crop planted during the week in five states, four of them across the northern Corn Belt, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin, and then throw into that mix Illinois.
Nationally, despite wet weather, corn growers have managed to get 70% of the crop planted. That's within 1% of the five-year average. Soybeans, 52% planted, 3% ahead of average. Gary Crawford, Washington.